Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I'm your host on this weekend show. I also want to remind everybody, please visit our website, kereport.com, throughout the week because, this whole year actually has been very, very busy and every day I'm publishing anywhere from, 5-6 interviews a day, trying to keep everyone up to date on companies and market moves. I'm kicking off this weekend show with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report, one of my preferred guests to put on the weekend show to cover more in a broad sense, more from a generalist aspect, what's happening in these markets. Now, Mike, you and I are recording this late in the day on Thursday, so we don't know where the markets close, but one thing that I think we can all take away from the trading action in Thursday is this broad sell-off across the board, a lot seeming to be on the back of Jerome Powell's comments from earlier today on Thursday. Let's break down Powell's comments. Why and what did Powell say that you think is moving these markets and scaring investors out?
No problem. It's actually kind of funny because back on, I guess it was the 22nd or 23rd when Powell was giving his testimony in Congress, I was listening to what he was saying. I was thinking about how the markets had been sort of, weak and on pins and needles for a while, the bond markets it is. And I kind of came to the conclusion that the Fed, given rising inflation pressures and concerns, given the economic recovery we're seeing off the worst of the COVID lows, and given especially all the massive stimulus spending that's coming down the pike and that we've already seen from the Biden administration, what the market really wanted to hear was some kind of sop toward inflation concerns, reassurance that the cops are still on the beat, so to speak. I mean, the Fed has really been sounding almost extremely democratic and progressive in terms of the comments they're making, i.e., we don't care about inflation, and, we want to wait till every last person has a job, there's a chicken in every pot, we're going to let things run hot, we're not going to raise rates premature, and so on and so forth. It's been very much hand in glove with sort of the Biden administration's fiscal policies. But the bond market in the last month leading up to that was really starting to rebel against that, looking for a little bit more of a, hey, we appreciate your concerns. We recognize the economy is improving. We probably want to start changing our messaging. But the Fed just didn't get it. And I tweeted out on the 23rd during his testimony, I said, I wouldn't be surprised if we got a reverse taper tantrum. And by that, I mean, if you go back to 2013, the bond market had a taper tantrum because Ben Bernanke started saying, oh, maybe we can unwind, dial back the QE. Maybe we'll have to raise interest rates at some point. And he was saying that at a point when the market was not expecting that. So the market rebelled. Interest rates went up. Stock market went down and so on a message that the Fed might prematurely, in the market's view, tighten. This time around, Fed did the exact opposite, said, no, we're not going to prematurely tighten. We're going to keep QE. We're going to, keep rates low. We want to promote employment. We don't care about inflation, blah, blah, blah. And then what did you get? The same result, a taper tantrum in stocks and bonds. And the reason is that I think this time the big difference is there's tons of fiscal aid being and deficit spending being thrown at the economy and the market. So what the market wanted was some, again, the cops are on the beat messaging. We're concerned. We feel your pain, so to speak, about, what you're worried about. And the Powell didn't deliver that either in his testimony or in his comments on Thursday. So what happened? Bonds tanked, stocks tanked. The market got even more skittish. So in other words, Powell's fumbling the ball here, but he's fumbling it in the exact opposite way, yet having the same impact that Bernanke did in 2013. It's very ironic, but I think that, that's exactly how things are playing out here.
So, Mike, what do you think it takes to get Powell to do more, to make the Fed more active in these markets?
Well, the problem, it's ironic here because in Powell's messaging, he basically said, we're not too worried. We're not going to do anything unless markets get unruly and unless that, they move fast enough, interest rates move fast enough to tighten financial conditions. What happens when you say, we don't care until bad things happen? Bad things happen. The market tests you, and then you're forced to react. I mean, I don't know if Powell is just being overly academic about this. I don't know if it's just misreading the room, so to speak. But I really, really was adamant in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, that, given what's happening in the markets, given the economic environment, the Fed needed to change its messaging and change it fast, or it was going to risk having an unruly market. It was going to risk having the comfortable move in interest rates become uncomfortable. the rise in interest rates, accelerate and get to such a magnitude that it impacted other markets. And that's exactly what we've seen. What my expectations have completely played out. So again, the Fed really is dropping the ball here, and hopefully they'll get back on course, or we're going to have even worse results, when I say even worse results, I mean bigger declines, and especially some of these way overheated parts of the market that were relying on promises of easy money forever and no pushing back from the bond market. You look at some of these tech names, the Teslas, the ARK investments of the world. There's a lot of super overvalued, super high-octane parts of the stock market that have really benefited from the bond market working hand in glove with the Fed and the Biden administration. But, you know, the gloves fell off, if you will, at the beginning of February. And that means that certain parts of the market are really in some trouble here.
So when it comes to that whole trend that we've been talking about, this rotation within the markets, a day like today on Thursday is a good example of money just flooding out of the markets. The broad averages are down. Really, the only thing that I'm seeing that is up is the U.S. dollar and oil. Oil is a whole other discussion that I'll get to later in this show. But when it comes to where money's going, where do you see money fleeing to?
Yeah, what's very interesting is from September through maybe the end of January, you saw money rotating out of some of the more defensive yield-oriented stuff like utilities, consumer staples, and into things like financials, industrials, and so on, and as you mentioned, energy as well. What started to happen, though, when you look kind of, I was preparing this month's Safe Money Report issue, and I was looking behind the scenes at different sector performance. What you saw is starting in early February, the very beginning of February, financials kept on going, but you started losing many more sectors. It wasn't just your obvious sort of utilities and some REITs that were losing ground relative to the market, and it wasn't just consumer staples. You started losing healthcare. You started losing tech. You started losing other sectors, and it was pretty much just financials that were still going up. So that was a divergence that kind of foretold some rockier times. Now that's what we're seeing. So I mean, this isn't exactly a genius observation given what's happening in the market. We obviously need to see the rate market get tamed if we're going to see more forward progress in stocks overall. It's gotten to the point where instead of just leading to shifting behind the scenes from sector, lagging sector to leading sector, to actually money coming out entirely. And that's what we've seen again. That's when, interest rates go from being a diversion, a thing in the background that only impacts some assets and some sectors, into a real problem for the averages as a whole.
So as much as we can look at the economic data, it doesn't seem to at least impact what the Fed is doing, and hasn't for a little while now. It's more market moves. But one other thing that is, I think, playing a little bit of a role in just how optimistic people were getting and maybe the Fed staying on the sideline is the whole concept of this whole economic restart in the U.S. Even Texas this week announced that they're essentially reopening. How critical is it to watch what happens in Texas and this continued move in the U.S. towards, I guess, vaccinating everyone and getting the economy back restarted?
Well, there's certainly reason for optimism on the vaccination front, on the economic front. I mean, I know I'm ready to get on a plane and ready to get on a cruise ship at some point once it's safe and I'm vaccinated and so on. And I know I'm not alone. I mean, we all want to sort of restart our lives and get back to some semblance of normalcy that we had, 13, 14 months ago. And we're getting closer to that point. When you throw fiscal aid at the economy, you're turbocharging growth in the short to intermediate term as well, because you're giving people money they're going to go out and spend. The problem is, again, the Fed is sort of not acknowledging and or recognizing that shift in reality and sort of, easing the process a little bit, again, speaking to the bond market's concerns. And when you try and get that, when your messaging is off from what the market is sort of leaning towards, that's when you get these disconnects. That's when you get these tantrums. That's when you get these, sort of violent short-term moves. So, hopefully the Fed's going to kind of get it, so to speak, and, change its tune. And if it doesn't, then again, we're going to expect more of the kind of action that we saw this week.
Let's shift over to commodities, starting with precious metals, because gold continues to be under pressure, had a bad end to the week 2 weeks ago. This week isn't doing very well for it. When do investors start to move back into the precious metals?
Look, I mean, it's obvious that rising interest rates, rising real rates, meaning inflation-adjusted ones and so on more recently, that's been the headache for gold, and that's been, to a lesser degree for silver. Obviously, silver's economic sensitivity to industrial uses kind of helps it relative vis-a-vis to gold. especially when you look at things like copper. So, you know, I get the concerns. I get why it has been underperforming. But at the same time, I think, especially in sort of a still chaotic market environment, an environment where these violent moves can come out of nowhere, you're going to have some safety demand for that. And really, honestly, in terms of the long term, whether it's inflation, whether it's monetary inflation, whether it's just sort of a safety valve, given, you know, how much money is being printed and borrowed and spent here in the U.S. and in other countries, I think that you still have a very solid long-term case there. So, again, you know, it depends if you're a trader or an investor. And, I mean, from an investment standpoint, this bull market started in the back half of 2018. I still think we're probably only in the fifth inning of it. So I wouldn't do anything. You know, shorter term, you've got to get some relief in the rate market. And I think once you do, if we do get that relief in the rate market, we're going to see some violent upside in terms of the shorter term for precious metals as they reprice or deprice that interest rate risk.
Okay. So again, a lot of eyes on the bond market. What about commodities broadly then? Base metals had been screaming higher, but they're starting to pull back as well. How does that play into this whole picture, the whole market environment?
Sure. I mean, you've got things like oil, that, especially the recent OPEC news, where they're going to keep production cuts in effect for longer than I think the market was hoping for. That's put, you know, more strength in the oil market. Again, going back to what we said earlier, things like resuming travel, you know, jet fuel, gasoline demand going up. That's helping to underpin what's going on in sectors like energy. And copper, you know, it's partly a housing play. Low interest rates help there. If rates go up too much, you might get some bleeding or a little bit of letting the air out of that part of the market. But in general, I mean, the economic type commodities and metals are outperforming precious, and they're still doing well because you're getting the validation of the economic growth, the rebound, the vaccination process, and so on. Plus, I mean, if the bond market allows him to, the next thing the Biden administration wants to pivot towards is infrastructure. You're starting to get those media leaks towards that sort of attitude there, that's going to be the next priority if and when they get this $1.9 trillion broader stimulus in the can. So that's what I think, you know, that too, again, would obviously support a lot of the sort of the economically sensitive commodities if we truly can get that kind of stuff through Congress.
So is now the time to be defensive then with your money? See how this all plays out? Because quite frankly, there seems to be fear creeping into the market, and fear can bring down every sector.
You know, what I did in the Safe Money Report, I did actually peel a little bit of exposure off, sell a couple of stocks just to lower that a bit. You know, I've been paring down interest rate exposure for several months and sort of rotating into growthier type things. So I've been adjusting. I'm not a real panic point yet, because I'm not exposed to some of this overvalued, overhyped, you know, garbage type companies that have really been doing a dot-com 2 impersonation. If I owned that kind of stuff, I mean, if I was overexposed, my portfolio was chock full of EV companies and Tesla and, you know, ARK investments and these sort of micro and small cap tech names, I'd be panicking, because that kind of stuff is so overinflated that there's a lot of air that can come out. But if you're in more safe money type names, you're in some of these, you know, cyclicals and value type companies, which are finally starting to show a little more promise after being left for dead for so long, I don't think you have as much to worry about. Even if you go back to the dot-com bust, you know, while tech was falling apart the first year of the tech bust, tech ended up being down 40% or something. You know, you saw utilities, REITs, and some of these value type sectors actually rise in value or just basically hold their own. So I think that, you know, we could see more of that rotation behind the scenes. And so as long as you own the right kinds of stocks, I don't think you want to be running for the hills. I think you'll be okay. But I am, like I said, getting, you know, dialing things back a bit.
Yeah, fair enough. It looks like you're not alone in these markets. Mike, it's great having you on the show. I hope everybody enjoyed this first segment. I am going to be back and discussing a bit more on some of these commodity moves for the rest of the show. But Mike, it's always great having you on the show. I really appreciate your time this weekend.
Thank you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.